as Preston Real Toe.
Yeah. And it picked him out and it broke his back. So it radioed through for these Wright Stinson planes to come and pick him up. Well, we learnt afterwards they thought, well, it was probably a practice thing because there's no indication he'd been in any problems or anything with Japanese. Well, this plane did come over, but of course you couldn't land. If you can land, you couldn't take off, not in that. And he circled round and went off. Well, we put this man in a sick saddle, and he lasted about 3 days and died. What was his name? The colonel in charge of it. Oh, my memory. The name was his name.
Ferguson? Ferguson?
No, he was the brigadier. This was the colonel of the American Wright Stinson planes.
Never mind.
It'll come to me before. I believe he had 32 of these planes when he started and had one at the end of it. And they were very, very good. He came in to see us and apologised. He said, my men will land on a dime. He said, now, if there's anything you want, he said, if you want a heavy gun pulled in, just to fire one shot, he said, I'll bring it. He said, and my men will land. And they did. We lost a lot of planes, undercarriage folding up. We had one pilot with us for a week because we couldn't get him out. His plane just and all he had was a pistol. You know, but we looked after him anyway. When he got out, he came back and put chocolates and he dropped us too. That was very nice. But it was rough going. And
you were telling me how the objective was to set up this Aberdeen base.
Yes, that's right. Well, we got to this place where they decided Aberdeen would be instituted. So we did all that, made it a small landing strip so they could land these planes to take the sick and wounded out. Well, we were there for several days.
What job were you doing there?
I was still bodyguard to this officer. And we started off again to go down. I know because he used to sit back to back, the officer. You see, this is one of the reasons why I like the job. All the plans, and you could hear what was going on. And we were going down to an airport, air trip, place called Pinhui. Remember that. And we started off. And this officer I was there with him, he became very ill, sick. So I went to the colonel and told him. He said, well, put him on a pony. I said, I can't get him on a pony, I've tried it. Well, he said, we can't hang about, you know what the rules are. He said, just leave him, make sure he's got his revolver and food, whatever you can spare. I said, well, I can't walk away and leave the man like that. I said, I've been with him for months. He said, what option have you got? He said, you know what it is? He said, we just have to dispose of them, that's it. No, I said, well, we're only a couple of days away from where the brigade are. I'll kind of take him down there. He said, we don't know whether they're still there. Oh, I said, can't you wait? He said, we're radio silence. Well, I said, I'm not leaving him. He said, well, you please yourself, bastard. He said, well, you carry on, do what you want. So I went back and I told him. It took me a couple of days to go down there anyway. And they were still there, fortunately. These planes coming in and out. And I went over to this officer in charge, captain. And I said, oh, I've got a sick officer over here. He said, oh, he said, well, get him on this plane and you get on that one. I thought, oh, that's it, lovely. I'm not going to argue, that's an order, isn't it? Anyway, I got him on there. Lieutenant Lockyer, Charlie Lockyer. And I waited 2 minutes and let him go.
Lockyer was the officer.
And I got one foot on this plane and a voice said to me, hello, Preston, what are you doing here? When I turned around, it was Captain Finley, who was a marvellous fellow. And I said, I'll just get on this plane. He said, well, are you sick, wounded? I said, no. What are you doing getting on here then? I said, because he told me to. So he came over, actually. He said, any problems? He said, well, this is one of my men. He said, did you tell me to get on this plane? He said, yes. He said, there's nothing wrong with him. He said, oh, good try. He said, it won't work. Anyway, I said, God, I met you. He said, where's the column? I said, I don't know. Gone off. Oh, well, I said, what is your... Oh, I had to report to the Brigadier in Ferguson. And I saw him, he said, oh, he can join my protection platoon. I thought, oh, good, there, a good old doddle, that one, you know, they didn't get much anticipated bother, you know. And I, you know, the book I took with him. Anyway, I went to this platoon and joined them. And he came to me and he said, well, I want to know, this captain friend, he said, well, I want to know where the column are going. He said, because we've got to join them. No, I said, I'm all right here, I'm quite happy. No, he said, I said, well, don't you ask the Brigadier? He said, I have, and he won't tell me either. So, late that night, I thought to myself, well, he's not going to catch up with him, you know, like that. So he came to me, he said, no, first of all, he said, look, he said, we're two men, and we're short. So I said, oh, go on, give me the sob stuff. He said, well, it's true, he said. Look, I'm an officer, I'm supposed to be in charge of men, you're running with those men to do the fight. We're not there, somebody's doing your job, doing mine. I said, what are you doing back here anyway? Because you got flown out with a busted eardrum. Anyway, he got himself back into Burma. Man that liked it, enjoyed it. And I said, right, I've gone down to a place called Pinwee. He said, oh, I thought you would know. So I said, well, you know, they've been long gone men. The first night, I'm in this section, letting everybody go out. Tap on the shoulder, he said, come on, person, we're off. Oh, where? Down to Pinwee. Oh, I said, miles away. It doesn't matter, he said. Come on. So I went. We caught up with the column, and he was a very angry man, because when we met the colonel, he said, when are we going to do this attack on Pinwee? Well, he said, we've been down there, there's nothing there, it's empty. He said, oh, I don't believe it. He said, well, it's true. So he said, come on, Preston, we're going to have a look. We went down, because there's just empty huts there, you know, nothing there at all. God damn it, he said, I'll get all this wine and nothing. But he was a marvellous man.
What was his name?
Simsy. And he stayed on in India, as far as I know. I don't know whether he's still alive or dead. And he was a man that always had time to look after you, if you know what I mean. He's a great fella, great man. And so it went on. We had an early discussion earlier on about the ultimate objective. And I was looking at the map and everybody was talking about this place, Long King, which seemed to be reasonable, fairly near. And we got an Indian courier in the India Traitor Army. And because we never took prisoners, because we had to keep them. But this one was an Indian courier. Well, he escaped. But all the time he was with us, not only all overnight, one of these things happened, he just walked off into the jungle and that was it. Sequence of events that, you know, comment will talk about other people like that. But anyway, so he went with the name of Long Kim in his brain, because that's all we were talking about. And what I gathered, who it was, I don't know, but he reported back to the Japanese that we were going to attack Lincoln King. So they brought all their troops up, and we never went there. So I believe that helped somewhat by losing him. But Wingate threatened this officer of mine earlier on, the Lockyer, to get him out because he'd lost the prisoner, the only one we had. Anyway, Wingate died, as you know. And when I was looking at this map, and they said, where do you think this person? I said, oh, I think it's indoor, Qatar. So what makes you say that? I said, well, that terrain we was on that 10-day exercise, the last bit, I said, it's exactly the same. There's the two hills, the saddle in it, everything. So keep quiet, he said. I said, oh, is it true then? He said, I'm not telling you, but it was. Anyway, we went to go down south of Indore, go down the bottom and come up from the south, just us. And the rest of the columns were coming in from the north. We were to mount the attack on the first night, down on this particular day. And when we opened the attack, the North would move in. But it didn't work out that way. We got down south, and we had a bit of troubles here and there. And that's when I got separated from the column.
How did it happen?
Well, did a foolish thing. We had this section there, you know, in the various positions, because you've got no lamps and nothing like this. It's jungle. It's just dark, isn't it? It's just jungle. And this officer said to me, "Oh, go and tell Corporal, whatever his name was, of his section, that he's going to lead the section out of the leading platoon, us." So I said, "Yeah, well, I'll go and tell him." And I went off to this big tree that I remembered it really being placed. That's how you remember things, you know. When I got there was nobody there. Well, you can't shout because we're only not allowed to talk above a whisper sort of thing. Well, you try shouting in a whisper, it's not easy. And I couldn't find him anyway. Then I turned around and I'm lost. I don't know where I am. And I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? So I sat down under a tree, a little cigarette underneath me, bush hat, had a smoke, couldn't hear anything. I'm afraid to move because I didn't know where to go. I thought, well, first light, that'd be all right. The first light came, I still couldn't see anything. And I stayed there, and it got towards night time again. I thought, well, I just can't sit here. I've got to do something. You know, obviously, nobody's coming looking for me. And I thought, well, I know they've got to know that this attack is indoor. Now, when all that starts, I'll know where they are. Anyway, I waited for a while, and I thought, oh, take an instinct. But I went walking, and it was dark. And I stepped on somebody who swore at me in good old English language. It was part of the column. Anyway, this officer, when I got to him, I said, "Well, how did you get to?" He said, "Where did you get?" I said, "Well, I want to know where the corporal of his section was." He said, "Well, they came up," he said, "and joined us." I said, "They had no instructions." I said, "I was there to see them." "Oh, well," he said, "never mind." "Never mind," I said, "I've been out there for nearly 48 hours, I said, on my Jack Jones." I said, "I don't like it very much." I said, "Well, when's this attack going?" He said, "Well, it's changed." He said, "The North," he said, "have got into trouble. The Recce Regiment, I believe, were hit by a machine gun fire, and it set one of the hills that was carrying the fuel for the flamethrowers. Bomb, it went off, and everybody's running around in circles, you know. So we've been ordered," he said, "now to get out of the area because it's too hot to hold us," which was very nice. And we had to cross the road, the river, and the railway, all one after the other. Well, we got the first two, but another funny thing that happened. We can hear a train coming. Well, we couldn't set up anything to do anything with it because we've got half the column on one side of the railway and half of the other side coming across. As usual, we're in the bridgehead and we're watching them coming across, you know, get move on. We did this on the rails, you know, because we're getting a vibration. It's coming along, so get off. Well, this particular mule balked right across the railway line. He wasn't going to move. When they make up their mind, they're not going to move, they don't move. And I'm standing by this muleteer thinking what we're going to do with him. And this muleteer was swearing at him in the foulest language I've ever heard, in a whisper. And after that, I'm sure he just lifted that mule off. Sheer venom. Just lit the mule went anyway, and we hit the deck, and the train went past full of Japanese. I thought, a lovely shot, the Piat gun. We couldn't try to set it up. But we went over there, and anyway, we got through, we hit part of the railway, and we went between two Japanese columns, or whatever they were, open ground, and we crossed the railway. We had no choice. There was fires this side and fires that side. Even the mules knew not to make any kind of noise. We walked right dead through them. We even had a rest on the way. You could hear the Japanese and all that, but we were in no condition to fight anybody. And Well, we finally made out, I think it was Broadway that we got out. And we'd had 5 months and 3 weeks in there.
Broadway what, sorry?
The Broadway was the place where we flew out from. Because we walked in, but we flew out. And went to Camilla. We went on from there.
How long had you been in Burma for, personally?
Myself?
Yes.
5 months and 3 weeks. Because I wasn't entitled to the Burma Star. Notioned it was entitled to the Burma Star, but I hadn't been in there long enough. All but a week. I was it because I had a bit of a foray in there before I had Burma for a week, which carried me over, but it didn't matter. Because Wingate wasn't alive, Ferguson took it up, and there was such a stink about it, because we were being reinforced by some artillery men, ACAC artillery from Calcutta. When they arrived, they were wearing the Burma Star ribbon. And they had never even seen the skies over Burma, and they'd never fired a shot. A lot of enmity went on there. Anyway, finally we got the Burma Star awarded for what it was worth. But,
what condition were you in personally when you came out of Burma?
I always thank my mother and father for giving me a good constitution. Because I went in there and I weighed 10 stone 3. When I came out into the hospital, I weighed 9 stone 13. And I'm immune from malaria. Which is another thing. Tested for that. We used to take these mepocrine tablets in there to keep malaria down. Well, I mean, I lost my fed them to mules or something. And mosquito cream, I only had a small tin of it of ointment. And I used that to coat bamboo shoots, you know, splinters, to light fires with. So, one of those things.
So, you were pretty fit when you came out?
Yes, yes, I was pretty fit until now.
Until
1995? I'd been having problems with eruptions on the body. Large lumps that suddenly appeared on the arms and one on the face, and it's like mad. It lasted about 3 or 4 days and then it disappeared. Under the balls of my feet it started on. Felt as if I was walking in high heel shoes. Well, I go to the doctor, they said, oh, some form of allergy, but we don't know what it could be. And if it lasts 3 or 4 days, nothing to worry about. Well, Dr. Hill at the Liverpool Tropical Disease Hospital wrote a letter to the Chindits Association, and he said he'd had 30 men in the ex-Japanese prisoners of war that got these things called strongyloides, a worm. And that he'd now got 3 Chindits in that had not been prisoners of war that had this, and he described the symptoms, and that was exactly what I had. He said it's I found out that it's a worm that gets in through the feet. Because I walked in bare feet for a while, you know, the Japanese and things, skirted. And it comes up through there, and it's a worm that infects the upper intestine. And they lay dormant. And if they start on the move, they're not in the blood, you see, they're in the body. You get a very faint, thin line, and then these lumps and bumps come up. Well, I went to see my doctor, and he said, yes, he said, oh no, I don't think he said it. Anyway, it came up on television. He phoned me up, said, bring that letter down, which is there in their file somewhere. And on no account must I have any kind of a steroid injection, particularly cortisone, because that make them multiply, they infect the lungs, the heart, and the inner ear. Now this is the thing, the inner ear. So he said, I'll investigate. This was on the Friday, and Saturday I was in the Tropical Disease Hospital in Houston. I was tested, got what they called the strings test. They gave me an antisickness pill, a capsule to swallow, and it was attached on a thin thread to the cheek. I had to lay on the side, on the right side, for minimum of 5 hours. Don't go to sleep, don't turn over, do nothing. I said, Spurn, I want to go to the toilet. I said, oh, look, you just lay there, otherwise you're going to start it all over again. With the thing with this thing going in, and the nurse came, I was actually 7 and a quarter or something like that. She came in with long glass on up to here, and a little jar, and then she started to pull this out, and it felt like knives coming out. And you felt you wanted to be sick, but you couldn't be, because it said this thing still did it. She held it up, and work went in white, came out yellow with these little tiny things hanging on. It's all lovely, she said. Well, and put it in the jar.
That was the worm?
That was the worm. And then I had this treatment, and it was 3 times a day they gave me these drugs, about as big as a thumbnail, pink, horrible things. Drink as much water as you can. And I smelled it. I couldn't believe it was coming from a human body. And when I went to the toilet, I could smell it. Terrible, you know, an awful smell. Because I had to give the stooling every day. And it was coming from me. It wasn't how other people, but these things were dying, I suppose. Well, what, 10 days, I think it was. And they said to me, well, we're discharging it now. There's nothing more. That's the treatment finished. It was 3 weeks before I could write my own name, because I was suffering with drug withdrawal symptoms. When I got home that night, 7 o'clock, when my drugs were due, my wife would tell you I was crying. I didn't know where I was coming or going or what. Anyway, it went off. And but as I say, for nearly 3 weeks, I couldn't write a check. I couldn't sign it. Even with both hands, it was just like that. Terrible thing, this drug business. I wouldn't go on to that or for anybody. Anyway, I had to go back, and he said to me, the specialist there, said, well, as far as we can tell, you're cleared out. He said, but it's not 100%. There's always the risk of one or two being dormant, so you must still never have a cortisone injection or other steroids. This is 1980. I came up here. Now I've gone deaf. Just within a year, in my right ear, suddenly like that, in the cinema, before I was married. And I said to this friend, I was saying, this picture's gone quiet as me. It must be good. This picture's all right. When I came out, everything was muted. I felt I was deaf in that ear. And I was going out to Malaya. And I had an examination to find out. And when I told about this deafness, they sent me along to Welbeck Street Hospital, and they examined me, and they said, oh, yeah, it's a small operation. I said, oh, when do you want me to come in? See the lady Armour. And she said, yes, in 2 years. I thought, I know I'm deaf. I said, did you take 2 years? She said, yes. I said, I'm going to Malaya at the end of the month. Sorry, she said, the next bed is available in 2 years. Now, that's then. In what? In 1949-50, something like that. Bed shortage then. And so I said, well, that's all I can do. And they said, it's a small operation. I said, well, you know, can't get it done. I went outside, and 5 years later, or 4.5 years later, I came home. My mother said, Liv has just arrived for you this morning. I said, what's it for? Appointment for the hospital, St Mary's in Kensington. The other was defunct. Well, when I went there to see them, and they said, oh, yes, you've been waiting a time. I said, yes, 4.5 years. Oh, no, they said, 2. No, I said, you look at your papers. Well, I went in and had an operation on my nose. And I came out of it. First thing I looked like nothing. And I was waiting.
You could hear nothing when they tested. You could hear nothing when they tested your right ear.
No, not a thing. So when I was being discharged, I said, well, they said, oh, yes, lovely operation. I said, well, no, what about this? I said, this is what I'm training for, the deafness. Oh, I said, natural. I said, how can it be natural? 27 years of age. So what happened, they said. I said, what was the operation all about? They said, oh, removed the polypus. I said, what about polypus?
It from your nose.
Yeah. So anyway, I came up here. When I was in the hospital, what a man come from the pensions, war pensions department. And he said, oh, Mr. Preston, he said, we've got your name down, you've got to apply for a pension. I said, oh, well, how can I apply for that if I've been cured, you know? Oh, he said, it's your deafness. Oh, I said, well, what is it? He said, it's related. Oh, right. Well, I couldn't fill the form in. I said, I couldn't write. He filled it in for me after all the questions and everything. And they wrote to me, and they said, after 1 year, they had trouble chasing me. After 1 year, they sent me £62.20 and a form. I've still got the form here. And that's that. Right to appeal. So I appealed, never heard another word. So I was typical. I came up here and I saw this specialist here, Mr. Baker, about the deafness. And he said, well, we've given you the most powerful one we have. He said, never mind. He said,
most powerful drug?
Hearing aid.
Hearing.
He said, never mind. He said, where's your pension? He said, you can get things that we can't supply. I said, I haven't got a pension. What are you talking about? I said, I haven't got a pension. I don't believe it. He said, I said, well, I haven't. I said, look, there's the form. I've got £62.20. Rubbish, he said. I said, a lot of 14th Army men. He said, they're shattered. I said, well, I'm not shattered. I said, but I'm deaf. And he said, well, look, we'll take this up. He said, I'll write to them. He said, and you do the same thing through your people. So the British Legion got it here. Welfare officer, I saw him. And, oh, it's been going on now. They refuted everything. And I found out the reason why they won't give me a pension is because I'm not on the list. Strongyloides is not on the list. Deafness, they don't check this. Osteosclerosis. My doctor says, look, Alec, he said, you've got two things. He says, strongyloids, you did pick them up in your back garden. And to this day, you still cannot have a cortisone injection or steroids. And he said, your deafness, they've called it now osteosclerosis. Who knows how that starts? These are all the following things you did. Delayed action. He said, you've got to go on with it. Well, I'm waiting now for the actual tribunal. I've done everything they've asked me. I've been all over the place. Nobody examined me for strongyloides. Deafness, yes. Anyway, they sent me a copy of the file that's going before the tribunal. They said it within 6 months. That was last November. I still haven't learned anything. I even saw the head of pensions for Leeds, and he said, sure, you should go ahead with this, he said, because you've got a very valid claim.
With the strongyloides, has it recurred since 1985?
Well, I've got psoriasis. Now, psoriasis is an itch, but came up an itch that wasn't strongyloides. It happened both sides like it did before, but I didn't get the bumps, but I got the itch. And it lasted, it's 4 days and disappeared. I saw the doctor, he said, well, I can give you so. He said, well, you're thinking what I'll think. My doctor here, he said, I've read up so much, because he said, I'm just a GP, we're not tropical. But I said, I've read up strongyloides because I'm interested. He said, and I've read it about it until my eyeballs popped out. I said, well, is it true then that I can't have a second operation, a clearance? You might. He said, well, we've got different drugs and stuff to treat you. The problem is it could have the adverse effect on you and bring them out. That's it. So you still can't have another.